I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
10, 9, ignition sequence start.
I live on the west coast of Florida, almost directly across the state from the Kennedy Space Center. And it seems like right now that it's almost every day where something is being launched and I'm able to peek out my window and find that little dot of light or trail of smoke moving through the sky, and you know, and knowing that something is coming back to Earth that was reusable as part of it as well. I think we're very close to that happening on an even more regular basis. And what I think is interesting about that too is that's going to make the accessibility of getting to space available for more and more people, and it's becoming real to people. And hopefully beyond that technical side of it, people are going to learn more and more about the true value of why we lift ourselves off this planet anyway.
Welcome back to Where's My Jetpack? Back in the 1960s, we were promised everything from jetpacks to flying cars and holidays in space. But here we are in the 21st century with not a jetpack in sight. So what happened to those space age dreams? I'm Sarah Cruddas.
And I'm Luke Moore.
And each episode, we'll be taking you on a mission to find out by exploring a different futuristic promise that never was, to find out if it was all just science fiction or if these great inventions are either just around the corner or lurking in some unexpected places. This is episode 6, Where's My Reusable Rocket? So, reusable rockets, I have got my SpaceX Starship sweatshirt on. It's quite warm in the studio. I am sweating in it just so I can wear it for this episode. This is my passion. This is something which really excites me, but I understand it's something which not everyone might understand just yet.
Yeah, so this is a completely different type of episode for me, because normally we sit in here, I get really excited looking into things like flying cars or you know, hoverboards or whatever it may be, or going to the Mars or whatever. But with this one, it's apparently really important, and it's clearly crucial to future space flight and travel and exploration. But as I'm not a scientist, and as I think many people listening at home will testify to, I'm not entirely sure why it's so important and why it's something that we have to really focus on. So it's going to be exciting to find out more about it.
Yeah, if we are to succeed as a species in doing anything beyond Earth, and bearing in mind 90% of what we do in space is actually about improving life on Earth, we need to crack this problem of how to get to space. And it is hugely expensive to get to space. And then we just throw away much of the vehicle that we use to get to space. So if we can crack this, if we can make space more accessible, more affordable, beat, you know, gravity, so to speak, and that cost of escaping Earth's gravity well and getting into orbit around Earth or further into our solar system, we need reusable rocket technology. So it has the potential to transform space exploration as well as life on Earth. And much as in the same way in the 1990s, the internet was accessible to anyone with an idea because it was free to access. If we can make getting to space really, really inexpensive, which reusable rockets will one day potentially maybe do, that means more people with more ideas can create companies which will change the world and create a future that we can't imagine yet, just as in the same way in the 90s, you couldn't imagine Google or Facebook or Amazon and these big companies which will benefit people, help to connect the world, help to educate people, will come from reusable rockets as well as all the great stuff in space.
So this fits into the Where's My Jetpack style, because we, growing up and back in the day, we thought about people going back and forward to space all the time, but that hasn't quite happened yet. And the reusable rocket is a big part of that. Is that what you're saying?
That is what I'm saying. So let's first of all take a look at the history of trying to make space travel reusable.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Science fiction made it seem so easy.
Thunderbirds are go.
But in reality, getting to space was a lot harder.
There were a number of failures during the year, and the United States promptly announced them. The first and most spectacular of these was Vanguard at the end of 1957. There were other Vanguard failures. All achieved takeoff, but trouble occurred either in the second or third stages.
And once we managed to get there, the rockets that were used were simply discarded. Even the spacecraft that housed the astronauts were single-use. Then, in the 1980s, came the Space Shuttle program and our first attempt to make spacecraft reusable.
Just arcing straight up into the sky. What an unbelievable sight. I didn't think anything could match an Apollo.
Roger.
The most complex machine ever built, the Space Shuttle was designed so that its boosters and the orbiter could be used over and over again. It was so promising that the Russians even had a suspiciously similar version of their own, called the Buran.
There had been some concern that the flight would be delayed by bad weather. Last month, the Soviets aborted their first attempt to launch the shuttle with only 51 seconds left in the countdown. But tonight, the world's most powerful booster rocket sent Buran on its way.
But the Buran only flew to space once, and that was without crew. And though the space shuttle carried more astronauts to orbit than any other vehicle, it didn't deliver on its promise to fly frequently and instead became hugely expensive, costing nearly $500 million per mission. In 2011, after 30 years of service, the space shuttle was retired.
After serving the world for over 30 years, the space shuttle's earned its place in history and come to a final stop.
And NASA astronauts were left to fly into space with the Russians using rocket technology that dated back to the 1960s.
Liftoff. Liftoff of the Soyuz TMA-05M carrying Sonny Williams, Yuri Malenchenko, and Aki Hoshide on a two-day journey to the International Space Station.
All of their launcher parameters are nominal.
So I was actually there in 2011 for the final ever Space Shuttle launch and landing. And I don't know if you've ever been to the Space Coast of Florida.
I have.
Have you?
Yeah.
Well, that area, Cocoa Beach, it was bustling during the 1960s up until 2011 when the Space Shuttle landed for the final time and it declined. And so many people lost their jobs and it was quite depressing. For me, it was an incredible personal moment to be literally sat in a ditch and reporting, you know, because that was the only place I could get a satellite signal next to the runway as the shuttle touched down for the final time. I can still see it now. It was at dark. It was incredible. But then that area kind of declined. I went to a party that evening with the shuttle in the background, which had just come from space, and people were losing their jobs. And so much hope and so much promise from that reusable space vehicle disappeared when the space shuttle retired back in 2011. And now what you're seeing 10 years later is many more companies moving back to the area, moving back to the space coast in Florida. And after that lull, after that depression of kind of losing this reusable space vehicle, we're kind of getting it back.
So why weren't these kind of reusable things developed as part of the thinking from the very start? Is it because when the space race first starts in the kind of 50s, going through the 60s and culminating with Apollo 11 in 69 or whatever, and I know a few people went to the moon after that, but that space race era, is that because there were people developing it were so desperate just to get up there that they weren't thinking longer term or reusability or sustainability or anything like that? It was just a case of, can we get there?
Well, it's really complicated because rocket science is not easy. You know, they don't call it rocket science for any other reason. It's hugely complicated. So, of course, it was a war for all intents and purposes. Space, during the space race, was as much about politics as it was actually about exploration. So people were just trying to get there. It's why we left a load of junk.
Get there quickest, basically.
Yep, get there quickest. Yeah. Secondly, it wasn't really financially viable to have reusable rockets because you'd have to invest more in the technology. Weight is so important. And the more weight you have, mm-hmm. you're then going to need to say it's something which is reusable. You're going to have more parts to it. So then you need more fuel to lift that. And then you need more fuel to lift that fuel. So it gets really complicated. So it was more efficient to actually have single-use rockets just because of cost, just because of competition. But at the same time, there was actually a project in the 1960s called Project Dinosaur. And this was almost like a plane. It kind of looked like the space shuttle. It had wings. And people were looking at the feasibility of having a reusable vehicle. And that actually morphed in to what became the space shuttle, something which was given the okay in the 1970s after humans finished, you know, Apollo 17, the last mission to the moon, still to this day, the last mission to the moon. After that, we looked at reusable space technology. And then, you know, the Buran, as I mentioned then in that package, the Russians had a suspiciously almost identical version, which yeah. I actually got to see in Kazakhstan, which is basically a twin. Although some have said it was slightly better than the American version, right. probably because they copied it and improved it, certainly in like the fact that it didn't need a pilot to fly.
Why wasn't it used more often then?
Well, the Buran was only ever used once, yeah. And they just did a flight, and then I think it was two with money. The space shuttle, it was used a lot to begin with, but it was flawed. You know, you had the Challenger accident in 1986. Yeah. That was in the January of 1986, and it already was the second space flight of that year. So they really were planning. I think the previous year they had flown 9 space shuttles in 1 year. So space was becoming reusable. It was becoming something which more and more people could access. January 1986, a politician had gone up in that January, and then Christy McAuliffe, the teacher, was on board that fateful Challenger flight.
Yeah.
After that happened, it made people realise that actually it wasn't like getting on an aeroplane. Yeah. It wasn't as safe, and it wasn't as simple, the technology. The space shuttle is the most complex piece of machinery ever built. Mm. So it wasn't fit for purpose in the sense it had to be tested a lot more. And then, of course, you had the Columbia disaster in the early 2000s, 2003. And that was kind of like the final nail in the coffin, so to speak, for reusable space shuttles.
But it also needed a big booster to go up on the back of, right? Which wasn't reusable.
So you could reuse parts of it. You could reuse the orbiter, and then you could reuse the booster as well. Hmm. It even sounds complex explaining it, which is one of the reasons why it didn't work. And I think the best person to talk to about this or to hear more about this from is a woman called Nicole Stott,
right?
Who is an artist, but she's also, more importantly, I'd say she's an artist first, actually, but she's an astronaut, and she flew on the space shuttle numerous times, and she explains the complexity of this vehicle.
When you look at the space shuttle, especially the... you know, the orbiter, the flying part, where the people were, and, you know, this vehicle that just so beautifully landed on a runway coming home. There's complexity in that. There's complexity in the fact that the way it was designed was to solve the problems of everyone. It was to be the spaceship for everyone, the cargo, the orbiting laboratory, the people transporter, the docker to space stations, the builder of space stations, the deployer of satellites. It was really designed and built to do all of that and then to land on that runway coming home. Whereas the spacecraft that we're looking at now really are designed for a particular purpose. You know, you look at, you know, the capsules that we have coming along, the, you know, whether it's SpaceX Dragon, the Boeing vehicle, even NASA looking at the spacecraft that are going to take us back to the moon and onto Mars, they're being built in a very particular purpose way. Like, we're going to use this spacecraft to transport the people. We're going to use this spacecraft to transport the cargo. And then we're going to have to augment that in ways to do laboratory stuff and deployment kinds of things. And so in reality, I think it's a level of complexity.
So that kind of goes back to what we were talking about in the flying car episode, in the sense that it's really complicated when you're trying to build something to do multiple things, as we saw with the space shuttle. Whereas even if you look back to the Soyuz, which is what the Russians have used since the 1960s to send human beings and payloads to space, it's incredibly simple technology and it does one job. And now what we're starting to see, as we see reusability certainly developing in rocket parts, is that spacecraft are designed for one purpose, whereas a space shuttle was meant to be more like an aeroplane, which could actually go to space.
So in summary then, it's been a case of the very start of the space race, it was all about just getting up as quickly as possible.
Yep. Then throughout, and cheaply as possible.
And then throughout the 70s and the 80s, moving into the 90s and beyond, it was more about making as much of it reusable as possible. But then for different reasons, that was kind of defunded and the project kind of dropped off. And now, again, with the advent of all these private individuals and different commercial entities, we're starting to see it become a much more reusability-focused project.
Yeah, the Space Shuttle was a great idea, but it was almost before its time in some way. It didn't...
It looked cool, by the way.
It looked really amazing. Cool. And I'm to see a Space Shuttle launch is indescribable. It's literally like watching a firework go off a matter of miles away. I was at the press site when I watched that launch, and to think there's human beings on that. And it's so flimsy when you see it up close, and it's got these tiles on it, and it almost looks like a quilt, so to speak, the heat shields. And it's just an incredible feat of engineering, but it was slightly ahead of its time and it didn't quite work. But now what we're seeing is a resurgence and an excitement about space exploration that we haven't seen since the 1960s.
It seems to be happening all the time
now. Yeah, it really does. And that's thanks to reusable rockets. So let's see what's happening right now.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
Today, science fiction is becoming science fact.
That's our Dragon spacecraft, or version one, which is capable of taking cargo to and from the space station, including biological cargo like fish and mice and that kind of thing.
Though it did take many, many unsuccessful attempts to get there.
Well, as you can see from the scene, we had, again, another great flight up to the 10-kilometer apogee. We demonstrated the ability to transition the engines to the landing propellant tanks. The subsonic reentry looked very good and stable, like we saw again last December, so we've got a lot of good data on flap control. And again, we've just got to work on that landing a little bit.
Private space companies such as SpaceX and Blue Origin are now able to launch a spacecraft and then land the used rocket booster back on Earth. Even the capsules that carry astronauts and supplies can be used again and again.
3, 2, 1, release.
While space tourism company Virgin Galactic uses a reusable rocket-powered space plane for its passenger flights. Known as Spaceship 2, it can be continually reused to take passengers to the edge of space.
Copy, Sutter, fully deployed, Point Charlie complete.
Reusable rockets are becoming parts of our today.
So cool.
Yep.
CJ Mac, we set test points off and Bravo complete. You're going to space again.
I mean, this is something which is almost like that Thunderbirds science fiction. So at the moment, SpaceX and Blue Origin, if you're going to be really pedantic about this, and I have got my SpaceX sweatshirt on, but it was actually Blue Origin who managed to land, I think a month sooner, at what's known as the first stage. That's the bottom part of the rockets. They managed to land it just before SpaceX, although SpaceX would argue their rockets, their spacecraft go to orbit, whereas Blue Origin at the moment does something called suborbital, so it goes up and down. But to launch a rocket and then to have separation of the first stage from the payload or the second stage, if it's a two-stage rocket, and then to control that using thrusters to flip it round and then slow its descent to land on a target on the ground, either back near the launch pad or on a moving barge in the ocean, it is something people didn't even believe companies such as SpaceX could do. It took best part of 2 decades to achieve it, and now it's happening.
So is that the main challenge to developing a reusable rocket then? Because as far as I'm aware, back in the past, when the initial thrust to get off the ground, a lot of the thrusters and the boosters don't actually go anywhere near space. They peel off, right? You're talking about going all the way up, being able to survive in space, essentially in orbit, and then come back down through with all the associated friction and the heat that comes with coming back down and surviving and landing again on the target. Like you say, they're the main challenges,
aren't
they?
Well, they don't actually go to orbit, so the booster's discarded before the spacecraft.
But it comes back down and can be used again.
Yeah, so imagine it launching and then it gets to a certain height and then because you need to get the first stage, the bottom of a rocket, is used to get you above much of the air because that's where the most friction is. So you need the most force for that part. And then it's redundant, it's empty, so you then throw it away. And in the past, it would just land in the ocean, which isn't great for many reasons.
Yeah.
But now both SpaceX and Blue Origin, they've developed ways to land it on a barge, you know, the size of a couple of football fields in an ocean or on a target back on the ground. And then they can reuse them again. So SpaceX are now flying crew and flying payloads with first stages that have been reused. And the idea is that eventually the second stage will be reused as well. And then the capsules are reusable. And instead of throwing a rocket away, we can use it again. And this is something even astronauts such as Nicole Stott find almost science fiction-like.
It's a little sci-fi, isn't it? I mean, it gets like this sci-fi feel to it, that we're flying these pieces of a spacecraft back to Earth to use again. And that's just something very different to what we did with Shuttle, where we landed the orbiter on a runway and the boosters, you know, were recovered from the ocean. But landing those stages the way they do, it's kind of bringing this sci-fi to sci-fact reality that I think we're all looking for.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it does look amazing. It looks so futuristic to see it come back down and land in that spot. And you know, it's quite interesting that private companies are leading the charge here, I suppose, because they're, you know, repeated use makes it cheaper. During the space race, it was basically a blank check from NASA, right, to try and get there ahead of it.
It was less so, I would say, actually, because private companies can take risks that governments can't. So during the space race, it was almost like, get there at any cost. And then we suddenly had to be more conservative.
Yeah.
With budgets, but they can take risks. They can do this almost like the Silicon Valley mentality,
yeah,
of fail fast and often. And also, let's be honest, an intern who works at SpaceX is going to be working 80 to 90 hours a week. This is a way of life. This is, people are dedicating their life to this. And it sounds like a dry topic, reusable rockets, but if we want to become a multi-planetary species,
it's the basis,
need to improve the way we get there, because that enables all this amazing stuff, which we haven't dreamed up of yet, to actually happen. So this is the thing we need to get right in order to succeed in exploring and staying in space beyond Earth. You know, if you ever want to go to space, if anyone listening...
No, thank you.
No, but if you do, it's only going to be possible because if we crack this technology, it's easy to take space exploration for granted because we've done so much, but actually we've done so little. You know, I think with the number of people who've gone to space recently, we're now at the 600 mark in terms of humans that have been to space. 100 billion humans have existed in the entire history of our species. Only 600 are gone. But if we crack this, you could go, I could go, any of you listening could go. It really changes who can access space, and the ideas and the science that can access space to benefit life on Earth.
So reusable rockets then are basically here, and they're going to get better and better as we use them more?
They are, and they aren't. There are
a prototype of them, at least.
They are here in a sense. But another person who's a huge expert in this field is Livingston Holder. He's a former U.S. Air Force Academy astronaut, and he says there's still some difficulties to overcome.
Rockets are not reusable at the moment because it's so difficult to get to space that we can't get there without throwing the parts away. So when you look at a rocket, you see that it's always got multiple stages. Stage one fires, and then it separates, and stage two fires. Historically, stage one has got so much velocity and is so far away from the launch site that there's no place for it to land. We also historically launch over water, because if a rocket has a problem and we decide to terminate its flight, it blows up or lands in the water safely away from populated areas. So when we have this rocket with lots of velocity over the ocean, it's really hard to get that rocket back to the launch site. And that's why you see SpaceX putting drones out to sea, because it can catch the rocket, without having to come all the way back. Or they have some missions where they keep enough propellant in the tanks, not just to get the rocket up, but also to get the rocket back. When you roll the clock back in time, it was so difficult just to get to orbit. We did not have any spare propellant to burn to get us back down to the ground or even on a platform in the ocean. So we just were on the edge of technical capability to get to orbit. So there was no way to get the stuff back.
So we're kind of really, we're on the cusp of it. SpaceX, Blue Origin, which is called Jeff Bezos' space company, they're the disruptors. They're the ones. And I saw the SpaceX Falcon Heavy launch back in 2018, and you saw two of these rocket stages coming back to land. And it was almost more incredible than the launch. And it is, I don't know whether I'm selling you yet why they're so exciting. But if we want to succeed as a species by exploring space, then we need to crack this problem. Although we've had some successes, there's still a long way to go, and it is a huge feat of engineering.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? My dad would say something like that. You thought about getting your own fucking house.
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Reusable rockets are here to stay. But some, like Elon Musk, have bigger and bolder ambitions for the technology.
The long-term aspiration is to develop the technologies necessary to transport a large number of people and cargo to Mars.
His company, SpaceX, are currently testing a giant reusable rocket called Starship, which will one day take humans to Mars.
So the first order of business is to figure out how to get there. And it needs to be in a way that enables large numbers of people and cargo. It can't just be like a handful of people, because that's obviously not going to create a self-sustaining civilization.
While for others, the goal for the technology is to reduce the cost of access to space by up to 90%.
So he kind of compared what he's trying to do with space with what the internet did for Amazon. He wants this low price of emission.
Why does this matter? Because getting to space is hugely expensive. So if we can reduce the cost, that means more people and more ideas can access space.
So he's trying to develop these reusable rockets that Blue Origin are sending up and bringing down. He's currently spending $1 billion a year on this, but it seemed like the sky was kind of the limit for future spend.
With this comes the potential to change our lives in ways we cannot yet imagine. While it might sound like science fiction, it is reusable rocket technology which will be our first step towards one day becoming a multi-planetary species.
Spreading out may be the only thing that saves us from ourselves. I am convinced that humans need to leave Earth.
I feel like I like to use that term multi-planetary species quite a lot.
It sounds exciting though.
It sounds exciting. It sounds like something that's not real, but this is what people are working towards at the moment, and this is
why I love space so much, because we're going to see so much disruption, so much change in the next few decades because of reusable rocket technology. And it's something that science fiction, something the Thunderbirds had and other science fiction movies, it's something they dreamed up of. But if we're going to see human beings on Mars, if we're going to see a sustainable lunar presence, if we're going to go further into space, we need to crack this technology. We can't keep throwing away our rockets like we do right now.
And so people would have seen, listeners to the show would have seen lots and lots of news stories, lots and lots of updates around, you know, several this year alone, things going up and down, lots of different rival commercial space companies getting this stuff cracked. And some of the stuff that Elon Musk talked about, the Starship project in that little package there, I mean, if you look that up, it looks amazing. It looks like proper science fiction. You know, I can see why you're wearing the jumper, yep, because it's a cool thing. What time frames are we talking about here where we can really reap the benefits and see this, and we start seeing almost like a conveyor belt of things going up and down to space all the time?
Well, there's been a huge amount of launches in 2021. You certainly look at July, August, September. We've had Branson going to space on Virgin Galactic, which is this reusable space plane which is launched from the air. So it's taken to a certain height from its mothership, and then it's dropped. Then it fires its engines to you above much of the air, and then it goes to space and can be reused again. Then we've had the Blue Origin flights taking passengers to space, and then we've had SpaceX taking the Inspiration 4 crew to space, and we're seeing more and more people going to space because of this reusable technology. But then Starship, I don't know whether you've seen any of the videos, but basically it explodes.
Right.
Every time they try and land it. So it's this giant, and that's just the silvery thing you see. So it's a silver spaceship type thing. It looks like it's been hammered together. It's about 20 or 30 metres high. It launches and then they try and land it again. And I think they've managed to land it at the time of recording at least once now. But when it's finally on its big rocket, it will be ginormous. It sounds over optimistic. Within the next few years, they hope to be flying people aboard it, which is crazy to think it's blowing up most of the time they try and land it at the moment. And then, you know, that's going to disrupt things because it'll mean taking payloads, eventually astronauts to orbit, then to the moon, and then onward to Mars. Because Elon Musk, he's got this crazy, you know, some would say crazy ambition to go to Mars. He says he wants to die on Mars, but it's a ship like this, it's reusable rocket technology that he basically believes is the only thing which will enable humans to get to Mars.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also it helps to give a bit more further context to the cost involved, because, you know, talk about, we said, you know, the words reusable rocket technology quite a lot on this episode, and the importance around the cost and what it means. And according to figures I read, NASA, at the height of the space race, used to spend $95,000-ish for every kilogram it put into space. So astonishingly expensive. And a huge part of that is, of course, as we found out and as we've learned today, the rockets would just be discarded and they couldn't be reused. Now, with Elon Musk's SpaceX and their reusable rockets, that figure is estimated at the time of recording now to be only $285 per kilo, so down from $95,000 to $285. And people working at SpaceX believe it will eventually be possible to get it as low as $10 a kilo, which of course has the effect of just making it so much more egalitarian, so much more affordable, so much more available to people who want to be a part of it, and essentially something that can be done over and over and over again. And you can imagine, and it's the same, it's not a big stretch to imagine this, because, you know, look how cheap a TV is now. A TV used to be ridiculously expensive, but now, because they're made and consumed a lot, the cost comes down. It's just an extension of that, really, isn't it?
That's the best analogy I've ever heard, actually, in terms of the TV. You heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen, Luke Moore. But it's a great analogy, and it's this idea of launch, land, repeat.
Yeah.
You know, it's no longer the space shuttle. When it didn't fly very often, it had to be refurbished. It took a long time to prepare it again for another mission. But we want to be going to space more often. And I think it's important to be very clear here that it's not just about sending more people up. It's not about tourists. It's not about wealthy tourists. It's not about sending astronauts up, but it's about sending science up. It's about sending medical experiments up. You know, for example, we can research how cells in the body grow in microgravity in a way that we can't do on Earth, which can help with so many different types of medical research, cancer research, for example. We can look back at the Earth and find out the situation on Earth and make decisions, important decisions, to everything from flooding to climate change to how we manage the land better because of satellites in orbit around the Earth. So the more science and more technology we can get to space, but in an eco-friendly way, in a very conscientious way, the more benefits we can bring to Earth. I know it feels like it's just for this small group of people, these billionaires who don't care about us, much of the technology, much of the people working in the space industry are doing it because they want to help everyone on Earth.
And that's before you get into the idea of this multi-planetary species thing you talked about, where, you know, resources on Earth are finite, right, at some point. And we want to be able to be flexible and not so brittle as a species, because we want to, if something happens to this home, it's the only home we've got, as Stephen Hawking would say. If you can branch out and get to different places, it obviously makes the future of humanity a lot more sustainable as well, by definition. So it feels a little bit far off now when Elon Musk says these things about, you know, having a permanent colony on Mars. I mean, ultimately it seems mad now, but it won't always seem mad. We found out time and time again on these episodes, if you wait and if you're patient and things continue at the pace they're currently going at, it's not going to be science fiction, it's going to be reality.
And as you say, the becoming a multi-planetary species, they're just, you know, humans were built to explore. We were built to go over that hill, and it's that innate human curiosity. But I would argue most stuff we do in space should always be about human life and improving life on Earth. But we've got to keep moving forward because it's in our DNA to do so. But yeah, it just makes me so exciting what's going to come from this technology. But what I would say, though, is that there are still some huge hurdles to overcome. And one of them, as Livingston Holder explains, is not so much technological, but it's to do with our mindset.
It forces us to think differently about how we approach designing and building rockets, because we are so used to designing rockets essentially to be thrown away and to put bigger and bigger payloads on them to get more stuff to orbit on a single flight. So we have to kind of readjust our thinking to a life cycle cost of a rocket as opposed to a single cost for a rocket. And as we start to change our mindset to start looking at more reusability of systems, we start to realize the economic benefit of doing so. So our engineering focus changes. And that's the big shift that's going to be required. And the good news is that shift has started.
Is it going to depend a lot on fuel type as well? We need to talk a bit more about fuel type, because SpaceX uses liquid oxygen for the most part, right? And then I read earlier this year that was apparently quite in short supply due to the pandemic. It's used in ventilators and they had to prioritize with that. And then once up in space, probes have used like plutonium-based like radioisotope generators and stuff, which generate heat and power, but that's not being manufactured as much because the Cold War's ended. So that's potentially another fueling issue. I don't know if that's what's used for probes or has been used for probes in the past. What do you know what measures are in place for kind of improvements in fueling and stuff? Because that's obviously a big part of it as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, you could look at the environmental aspects. And at the moment, because launches are so infrequent,
yeah,
it accounts for, I wouldn't say negligible or zero, but a very teeny tiny part. I think there are more planes that launch, you know, in a minute or so, more planes that take off in a minute or so than space launches within the year. But we need to be mindful of this.
Yeah.
Certainly mentioned liquid oxygen. Most liquid rocket engines rely on hydrogen and oxygen. What does hydrogen and oxygen make? Water. We know water is prevalent throughout the solar system, as we've spoken about before, certainly in frozen form. So the idea really is to launch as lightweight as possible, with as little as possible, and then fuel up on the way. So as we've mentioned previously, think of the moon almost as being an intergalactic petrol station. But we need to look at all aspects. And one other thing is materials. So lighter, stronger materials, and then you'll need less fuel because these materials are lighter, but they're still doing what they're required. So it's an incredible feat of engineering. And I don't pretend to have all the answers, but it's something that people are working on right now. And it's something which will improve so many lives once we get it right.
So I think we've come to the time of the show then, Sarah, where we talk about, is it science fact or is it science fiction? I think I know the answer to this already, but why don't you let me know?
I think based on everything, it's happening. I wouldn't say it's science fiction. I wouldn't say it's science fact just yet.
Are we straddling the border of both?
We are straddling the border, because even though we've got first stages of rockets which can land and be reused, and we're seeing this with certainly Blue Origin and SpaceX, we're still not reusing rockets fully. But the technology is progressing so fast and change is happening much faster than most people realise. Certainly most, you almost become blinded to it in the space industry, I think. But change is happening. So it will be science fact very, very shortly. And I think it's not just about the benefits that will come in terms of science and technology, but it's also the wonder. And I think no one sums this up better than Nicole Stott, who has been to space so many times.
I live on the west coast of Florida, almost directly across the state from the Kennedy Space Center. And it seems like right now that it's almost every day where something is being launched and I'm able to peek out my window and find that little dot of light or trail of smoke moving through the sky, and you know, and knowing that something is coming back to Earth that was reusable as part of it as well. I think we're very close to that happening on an even more regular basis. And what I think is interesting about that too is that's going to make the accessibility of getting to space available for more and more people. And it's becoming real to people. And hopefully beyond that technical side of it, people are going to learn more and more about the true value of why we lift ourselves off this planet anyway. And that's a really special thing that I hope to see happen. This tech that's being developed now, I think, will shine light on just the really wonderful value that's coming from us being off the Earth to improve life on it.
I just love Nicole. She's so incredible.
She sounds amazing.
Like, she's been an aquanaut as well. So she's lived under the ocean. She's been an astronaut and she's an artist. And I just love that fact that you can be so many things and still be involved in the space industry.
And it's great to hear the benefits that are clearly going to be found and enjoyed by all this stuff that's happening. And it's a really romantic way that she put it as well. So it's almost like if you want all the fun stuff and all the important stuff and all the good stuff, sometimes you just need to get the basics right.
Yeah.
And this is one of those examples where, look, let's get this bit squared away. It'll become like second nature in however many years' time. We need it. It's the baseline for everything we want to achieve. Sometimes you've got to pay attention to the basics. You've got to build a good foundation for your house. It ain't just all about picking the curtains. Look, we're not quite in science fact yet, but we can see it from here.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Join us next week as we pack one 7-month, 300 million mile trip into a single episode. That's right, we're asking, where's my Mars visit? Where's My Jetpack is a Stack production presented by me, Sarah Credis, and Luke Moore. The production team is Charlie Morgan, Luke Moore, and Sarah Credis. Our sound designer and editor is Tom Wally. Special thanks to our guests, Nicole Stott and Livingston Holder. If you like this show, please subscribe and rate wherever you listen to your podcast. It really does make a massive difference. And you can also follow Luke and I on Twitter. We're at Sarah Credis and at Luke Aaron Moore.
Where's My Jetpack is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah. You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.